Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, beautiful people of the Dear Nelly community. It is I, Kirsty Wiebeck, here. I'm just popping in to let you know that I have just started touring my brand new one-hour stand-up comedy show, I'll Be the Judge of That. I have opened it in Canberra to two absolutely wonderful audiences, and I'm going to be at Melbourne International Comedy Festival for a month. Then I'm heading to Sydney Comedy Festival. I'm going to Auckland. I'm going to Perth, Brisbane, Newcastle, Hobart, Launceston, Cairns, Warrnambool, and more places as well. I'm going to be all over the shop well into the year, and I would love to see some of you at a show. I saw some of you at shows last year, and you stuck around and you said g'day, and you were absolute treasures, and I'm a huge fan of the community that the wonderful Nelly Thomas has built. So if you can make it along to a show, jump on my website, www.kirstywebeck.com. Have a little peruse around the dates and the locations, and it would warm the cockles of my heart to see you there. Thank you, mates.
Hey there, everybody. Nelly has been struck down by COVID. So I have to let you know that this week and next week, there will be an episode of Best Of and the live show that happened in Sydney. Now, paid subscribers would have already heard this episode. So Nelly promises that she'll make it up to you when she's back to full health. It's a very, very funny episode. I will say that the episode in Sydney, there is a hum in it. So it's not the best sound quality, but it is too funny not to bring it out. It's a great episode. I think you're really going to enjoy it. And of course, the best of some of your favorite moments over the last little while. Nelly will be back very soon. She's very excited to come back, but has sadly been very sick the last few weeks. Please enjoy this week's episode of Dear Nelly, Best Of and Sydney Show recorded at the Comedy Store.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice. Dear Nelly, yeah, some help would be nice. Dear Nelly, I'm eager to hear your point of view. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly, when you're 40 or more, dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through. Dear Nelly, I'm rocking my prime and it's time to get down some. Maybe mess around some. It's never too late to start. Fabulous guest, dear Nelly, won't you tell me what you think I should do?
Oh, hello, chickens. I am the allegedly fabulous Adam Richard. I would like to welcome you here to the Comedy Store to the very first Dear Nelly live in Sydney. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, whose land we are currently on. We would like to acknowledge their elders, past, present and emerging. Sovereignty was never ceded. This has always been and always will be Aboriginal land. And when you're going to vote in the next week or so, just think, whose side do you want to be on? The people who protest against drag story time, all rational, sensible people. I don't want to tell anyone how to vote. I don't want to tell anyone whether they want to be on the same side as a neo-Nazi, okay? That's up to you. It's your choice. whether we have a voice. So, ladies, babies, and gabies, welcome to the first ever Dear Nelly live show in Sydney. Please welcome to the stage your hostess with the mostess, Nelly Thomas!
Hello, everybody. How are we? We good? Excellent. Welcome here to the beautiful Comedy Store. Let me start by asking, is there anyone who has never listened to the podcast? There's going to be a couple of you, yeah? What the actual fuck are you doing here? You made her come, didn't you? You did. All right. Do you need some background, darling? Just you and I. Everyone else will wait. Everyone else will wait. Do you have any idea what it's about? Relationship stuff? I love the inflection at the end. Yeah. What I say at the start of every episode, for those who are listeners will know, if you don't like swearing, this is really going to give you the shits. Right? So off you fuck. It is about relationship stuff. So long story short, maybe someone else in the house did as well, I got COVID divorced. I know that sounds sad. No, good. Good for everybody. Yay, yay. We're ripping up the script on divorce. I'm happier, they're happier, the kids are actually happier, it's all right. We'll get into all of that. Got COVID divorced. Unlike a normal person, I didn't just talk to my friends about it. I decided to make a couple of podcasts. And this is one, right? So that's the background. And the idea is 90% of my guests, I was going to say 100, but that would be lying for those of you who are fans, almost all my guests are over 40. All right? You still with me? So it's sex, it's dating, it's relationships, but over 40. Because when you go and look for that shit, it's all like 19-year-olds on Love Island. And bless you, if you're here, great, but I don't want to fuck you. Huh? I mean, have a crack. Have a crack. I'll do a passion dash, but that is as far as it's going to go. So we try and get into, the issues are different. The issues are different. If you haven't dated since the late 90s, like the last date I'd been on was 1999. It was in real life. There was no swiping. There was no criteria. It's just like, oh, you're there? Great. Excellent. So we try and get into those issues. And if you're a single parent, if you're a bit older, if you were in the post-porn era, whatever the fuck that means, things have changed. So we try and get into those issues. Now, is that a good enough explainer? Excellent. Now I need to, I feel like we're friends. Are you single?
Yes,
I am. Asking for a friend. How old are you?
46.
46, you're in my age bracket. What is your status? How would you identify? You don't know what I'm asking. You're not one of mine. Okay, you are. You are. 46-year-old lesbian. Ooh, look at her playing hard to get. I know exactly why you're here. She's in a blue dress. She's got a microphone. Oh, this could go all night, seriously, and it won't be fun for anybody else. Would you like to meet your panel? How amazing is this fucking panel? Right, let's bring them out. I was going to talk more, but I just want to hear from these people. First of all, you all know who he is. Benjamin Law. Benjamin Law. Come on, Ben, out you come. Oh, he's got lost in the green room. Author, editor, screenwriter, producer, journalist, podcaster, broadcaster, Survivor fan right here. He's my favourite contestant on Survivor Australia. Last but not least, something I didn't know until I Googled him in the Google machine, he's a doctor, actual doctor of philosophy. I mean, don't ask him to save your life. Like, he'll just write you an essay, but... PhD in Creative Writing and Cultural Studies. So if you've got a semiotic emergency, this is your man. Welcome to the stage. Can you hear me, Benjamin Law? Benjamin Law! Hello. Where, I think you go in the middle, darling. You'll be sandwiched. You don't mind a bit of sandwich? No. That's what I've heard.
Double adapter over here.
You know his drag name, Spit Roast?
What am I being marinated in?
Next up, oh my God, it's Yumi Steins. It's Yumi Steins! I don't recommend Googling Yumi unless you want to be subjected to... Hello, darling. Look at her. Come on in. You can go... Actually, you can come here for me, please. I do recommend Googling Yumi on one level, and on another level I don't, because any of you who follow the media will know that this beautiful human being has been subjected to the most vile intersectional racism, homophobia, ableism, misogyny, all the shit. Boo! So I would rather have her in the room, listen to the wisdom from this beautiful person, and actually celebrate her. So can you please put your hands together for the one and only Yumi Steins. Of course, we'll be vlogging your book. We'll be telling about all your things. Same with Ben. Last but not least, it's the one and only Chris Ryan. Chris Ryan! Yeah, Chris. Hello, journalist, mum, later in life comedian, sort of. Chris Ryan, one best newcomer at the Sydney Comedy Festival in 2019 at the age of 40-something. It's never too late. Never too late. She does stand-up. She hosts radio. She's toured the Middle East and Queensland.
Same thing.
She was married, living a happy, but I would say somewhat frustrated life in the burbs. Somewhat, we'll get into that, for about 100 years. She's now sort of single. We'll get into that as well. I don't think she's mingling. She's tackling... No, I can't even read my own writing. What I will say, though, is that I went to her show this year. It is full of hope. It is full of laughter. It's full of joy. And it's right in the Dianelli wheelhouse of going, it really is never too late to find your happiness and find your purpose. This is the one and only Chris Ryan.
That's very kind. Thanks, Nelly. Thank you.
Now, can we start before I ask you how you are? I've got presents. Curated.
Love presents.
Now, one of the many things I love about Yumi Steins is that she loves a flat shoe, but you've got a heel on today.
I wear them for literally 5 minutes after I walk off stage.
Exactly. Yeah. You're a great advocate for the flat shoe, so I bought you from Circular Quay, obviously, a thong key ring. Just for you, darling.
Thank you.
Now, one of the things I love about Chris Ryan, but I find it suspect, is that she believes in the universe. And whenever we speak on the phone, she's like, the universe is bringing that to you, Nelly. I assume she's tarot adjacent, so I bought her a tarot book. It's a good one, though. It's from the art gallery.
It's very nice.
It's proper.
Thanks heaps.
It's proper. And for Benjamin Law, a sign of my respect in the plastic bag, he said, I stole all the shit I possibly could from the Sofitel.
Yes!
Wait, let me guess. Slippers?
Slippers.
They didn't have slippers, downgraded.
Oh, Nelly, there's a used condom in here. No, yeah. I'm just kidding.
That was Adam Richard. I apologise. I apologise. You know, one of my favourite TV moments was when you were doing the homelessness thing and Ben goes into this dentist going, can I please have some free toothpaste? I've always, I am working class girl, you steal whatever you can.
Yeah. So this is when I did like a docuseries for SBS where we all experienced various forms of homelessness. We were the Trojan
horse.
This is awkward. Yeah. But when I took that toothpaste, the homelessness expert told me, that's because you're entitled, Ben. And I'm like, oh my God, you're absolutely right. No homeless person would walk into a dentist and ask for toothpaste.
No.
That's just
me. I tell you what, every Rough as Guts girl from WA walks into the Sofitel and goes, what is nailed down? I do not do a corporate gig without taking the flowers.
Yeah.
Ever.
I once checked into a hotel with my mum and she ended up taking the crockery and cutlery.
Love.
And I was billed for it. Which
Does
is a boss
move.
Does
your mum bargain at Maya?
She bargains. Yeah. She's Chinese. Yeah. Of course she bargains everywhere.
Yeah. See, that's like the next level. I have not ascended to that level.
My mum asked if she could buy the sheets secondhand from a hotel once.
Let's not yuck her yum. That's just her thing.
Gordon Ramsay there with his blue light. Too much cheese, Mum. Too much cheese. All right, can we start? I would like to start with each of you in whatever amount of detail. For those of you who listen, not you, not my new girlfriend, but I'll never push you further than you want to go. Respect, boundaries, consent, etc. I'll ask the questions. Feel free to say yes or no. Can you give me, starting with you, wonderful Chris Ryan, just give us a quick pricey of your relationship history. You're 49.
Oh, just that?
Yeah.
No worries.
She's 50 next week. Hey, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, almost, yeah. Look, I was in a great relationship with the father of my children for about 26 years, which was excellent.
Short term.
and we never got married because I thought I didn't want to jinx it, you know. that's actually what I thought. I'm not trying to be funny. Also, we just went to Europe. But also, before that, I probably had, maybe two guys I loved. And when
what age did you meet your ex-husband?
22 I was.
All right, so you're still young. 22 little ducks for bingo lovers, 22.
Yeah.
Prior to that, you'd had a couple of boyfriends.
Prior to that, yeah. I had a couple of serious ones that I really liked.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just some stupid stuff in high school. Like, I remember in high school when I kicked off.
Year 10.
When I got the ball rolling, as
yes.
it were. I think my main modus operandi was...
Is anyone else just doing this? Just got the ball rolling.
What?
No, don't worry about it. Don't worry. Don't be disgusting.
It's a... Oh.
Don't be so gross.
Oh, my God. It's a podcast. They can't see what you
were
doing with your hand.
They're the only ones I care about.
No, but
about.
The people listening will be like, what was that?
Oh,
that was
fuck the listeners. Did they buy a ticket?
Anyway.
I mean, come on.
Nellie Thomas was in a clockwise motion. Fondling testicles. Yeah. Yes.
And Chris Ryan wasn't.
An unspecified person.
But yeah, prior to that, my modus operandi when I first started dating, and I am the vanilla of the team. I'm pretty sure I just have always liked blokes, and
so have I.
And my thing was I liked them till they liked me back.
Then you lost interest.
Then I was like, what's wrong with you?
What's as in what if you what, like me?
Yeah,
I
if
must
you like
be
me,
flawed.
Well, there's obviously a chink in the armour there.
Has anyone else encountered that in dating? When you're like really, and you think, oh, this is going really well, and then they kind of go, oh, why would you like me though?
It's well, you know, I didn't say it out loud. It's just in retrospect, I look back and I go, oh, that was self-esteem issues.
Oh, are you doing therapy?
Yeah, I'm working on it.
You're working.
But I think the classic example. I really like this guy from the other school, really cute. But he gave me a Valentine's Day rose in about year 9.
Cute.
And which is adorable and lovely.
What was his name?
I think it was Daniel.
Well done, Daniel. That's
cute. I think
cute
it was
Daniel.
Fuck, I can't remember. But
isn't it?
And
little Valentine's rose.
But you know what?
Rose.
He wrote a little note on it that was like, I hope this is the beginning of something big.
Oh, Daniel.
Isn't that adorable? And do you know what happened?
Yeah, save it. Write it down. Write it down.
He misspelt beginning, and
and you were out.
I couldn't handle it. I'm sorry. I know that's not good.
Hang on. I get that at 49.
I'm not even making that up. That is real.
In year 9.
In year 9.
Jeez, you're prolific on Facebook these days, aren't you? Just fucking correcting
you
everybody.
You should see the typos. My typos are terrible. I don't know what I was thinking. I can't
like
even text
your
without
texts
typos.
Out.
Anyway, well, that was...
Right,
I
so
think I've
I'm
going to
move
it.
You forward. So you get married, 26 years. Ends a couple of years ago. Mm. What's your status now?
Look, I don't know. wow.
See, I know the answer to this, but it's like fucking dragging her to the river.
If you have simple answers, you're a simple person.
Hey.
I think... and Says I fucking
you.
Wish I was.
Says
no, I wish I was dumber. I'm not even that smart, but it's not dumb enough. Do you know what I mean?
I want to be happy.
Hang on. Simple answer. Simple person says the one who just introduced herself. I'm the vanilla of the panel. We'll be getting into that, my friend. What's your fucking status? Are you dating?
I am not seeing enough a long-distance man from Perth.
So you are dating a man in Perth,
well,
is what?
Yeah,
That's the simple answer.
I think it's
answer.
Fair to say we are doing that, yes.
By the
yes.
time this goes to air, though, it'll be over.
Yeah.
What? What did you say?
It'll be over by the time this broadcasts.
Oh, you reckon?
Let's be real.
See, how complex do you want it, Chris?
That's so harsh.
Like, why did I talk about that guy on Nelly's fucking podcast? He found me 2 weeks ago. Ghosted me. Changed his number. Blocked me on Instagram.
100%. Right.
I only met this woman today. I don't know about Fuck me.
Truth teller. Benjamin Law.
Yeah, what a segue.
Relationship. So you are in... You're married, basically.
Yeah. We're basically dead in gay years. We've been together for so long. Yeah.
So 21 years.
Yeah.
Same guy.
We got together at birth, obviously.
Yeah.
My boyfriend Scott and I, and I still like calling him my boyfriend.
I was
going
to say boyfriend. I mean, that's hot.
Yeah, because you have sex with your boyfriend. You don't have sex with your husband.
With your husband. No.
And even partner, like I introduce him formally as this is my partner, but I'm like, are you going to root your partner? You know?
It's like law firm adjacent.
Yeah. Fuck me, partner. No.
And boyfriend, we just met.
Yeah, and... Actually, I remember David Marr pouring scorn on me because I said, you know, the guy I've been dating for blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I still say that we're dating because that keeps it fresh as well.
It does.
But obviously what you're hearing is that I'm deluded. and I'm deluding myself. So, okay, full sexual medical history go. So I was brought up in Queensland, and in Queensland they do this weird thing where you finish school at 17.
Oh,
right.
They do in WA as well.
Yeah. And so then my first year of uni was straight after high school, but because my birthday's in September, I had to wait that whole time to really get shit-faced and go to the gay clubs.
Right.
You know, because I didn't have gay clubs where I grew up, but I had gay clubs in Brisbane.
And you didn't look older? Like, you couldn't sneak in?
No,
I mean, you still look pretty 25.
Yeah, I was like a fetus going to the local gay club. I was just...
And they're like, off you go.
But if you've been to Brisbane, you'll know one of the big gay clubs there is called The Beat. And when I turned 18... The B was blown out, and it just said eat. And I was like, I'm 18, and I'm gonna, gonna.
And your little 18-year-old heart's going nom 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 nom.
Buffet time. And this is so messy. I just remembered getting so absolutely annihilated there. This was shortly after my birthday, and 18th, and all I can remember from this night are flashes of this guy that I ended up going home with. But the thing that's most lucid about that night, and I really wish that it wasn't, was one of the lines that I said to him, which was, "You look like Rove McManus."
And then you said, "What's your name?" And he said, "Rove McManus."
The weird thing is I was actually at the Logies this year, and I finished the evening trapped inside the casino without, you know, you can't escape a casino in Sydney. And I was trapped there with Michelle Lim Davidson from The Newsreader, and she's got this massive Cinderella ball gown, and I'm holding her train. And we're trying to get out of this casino. And who do we run into?
Rove McManus.
Rove McManus. And I was just like, Rove, do you know how to get out of here? So it was him, Tasma Walton, his wife, me, Michelle Lim Davidson, going out. I'm like, I can't tell Rove that story from 17, 18 years
Rove,
old.
Yeah, Rove, you popped my cherries. Yeah. Like, I didn't even know. Did you have a boyfriend before that, or this was your first?
No, Rove McManus was my first. But then
this is going to be in the Daily Mail tomorrow. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. That guy wasn't to be my boyfriend. But the guy who did become my boyfriend and still is my boyfriend is someone I actually knew in high school. Isn't that weird? And he was in the year level below me, but we went to a very big high school where another year level apart is basically a universe away. But then he ended up working for my dad's restaurant in the summer break, where I would go back to work on the summer as well. And we were kind of mates.
Listen to everyone.
Wait, so you're the boss's son?
I'm the boss's son. There's a power
imbalance there.
And it's hot. And I remember when he walked in and he looked really different to the last time I'd seen him. Like, you know Scott, like Yumi's friend.
He'd had a glow up.
As well. Yeah, he'd had a glow up. He became a man over that year. And he had, like, his hair was, like, windswept, and he smelled like chemist bought Tommy Hilfiger. And,
oh, the real shit.
They smelled different.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Original
he was
stuff.
Loaded.
Yeah. And as soon as I saw him walk in for his first shift, I'm like, I'm going to get this guy drunk on Passion Pop. And that's what happened on New Year's Eve, and the rest is history.
Amazing. Aww. How cute. Yes, you can clap that. That's so cute. So you basically, you married your first boyfriend, basically?
Yeah, like I guess we're spiritually, financially married.
Oh, 21 years, you're fucking married. You're married.
Exactly.
I anoint you right
thank
now.
You, thank
husband
you.
And husband. It's done.
Okay,
I have no
that's
qualifications.
Legal now.
Don't worry, you'll be broken up by the time this comes out. It's fine. So, darling Yumi, take me back. Where do we start? Where do we get to?
I was an extremely horny kid.
Yeah, you were mad for it.
Can't even remember the first time I masturbated because I was so young.
Love.
And then I just escalated that really until about 5 years ago when my libido died.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll come back to that, but can I just point out how refreshing it is to hear a woman, we're of similar age, you're a bit younger than me, but a woman of this vintage just say, yes, I masturbate.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Yumi.
Yes,
yes, we do.
Yes, we
do.
Can. Yes. Yes, we can.
And there is something that I want to share about masturbating soon, but maybe not right now, because I want to talk about being in high school and not being able to get fingered to save my life.
Oh. You mean fingered well or at all?
At all.
Oh, that's a tragedy.
One time, two guys offered me a threesome and they both had raging cold sores.
Oh, no!
And I just remember saying, even though I'm desperate and horny, that's a no. That is a big weeping, pustling no.
Yeah, yeah.
So I couldn't get laid all through high school. I've always struggled to attract people.
Stop it.
Which is to say, I think I'm intimidating.
Okay, that I'll accept.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on. My girlfriend and I are already inviting you home, I tell you what. Siri, look at her. Come on.
So,
come on.
You know, I had a few randos and a few one night stands.
I apologize if this is making you uncomfortable.
At the age of 25, I started working on TV full time at Channel B. I was live most of the time. I had hair and makeup done. I was hot and in my prime. But again, I just could not get laid very easily.
Does this not blow everyone's mind?
And I kind of cracked the code when I was working in restaurant kitchens, which is I have to always hit on them.
Yeah, you have to do the instigating.
I have to do the instigating, which is incredibly empowering when you kind of go, oh, it's like a video game. I just have to click on someone and see how they react.
So tell me, you're 25. You see someone you like. How do you instigate?
So I'd go, hi, how are you going? And then just see what the vibe is, you know. Yeah. So it wasn't like, I want to fuck you. Or it might be quite bold, like, I think you're really cute. Or you're really...
That's a great line. Who's single in here? Just, you know, for those who are, you know, there's a lot of people ringing going, I don't know how to make the first move. That's a really good move because it's bold without being sleazy.
Totally. You know? If worst case scenario, they're not interested or they're taken, you've given them a lovely compliment.
100%.
Yeah. So I remember it was my birthday and I was drunk and I'd been out to see a band and I was with friends and I was like, if I can't get fucking laid on my birthday, what the fuck? And I was like, I'm on fucking television. Jesus Christ.
I'm on Channel V.
Anyway, so then this guy walks past and he's like, oh, he was in at Channel V that day because his band Regurgitator was being interviewed.
Stop.
So I was like, oh, hi, Ben. He's like, hi. I was, you know, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, it's my birthday. I'm a bit drunk. I'm just leaving. I'm going home. This night sucks. He goes, do you want me to walk you home?
Yes, I do. Is that what we're calling it now?
So you know, we have the chats as we're walking, we're making gags. There was a parked bulldozer or some sort of construction vehicle in Newtown as we were walking by, so we both hopped in it and went, thought we were hilarious.
Cute.
And then we got back to my place and basically he didn't leave for 3 days and I was pregnant in 2 weeks.
Oh! In 2 weeks?
Yep.
Can I ask, it's a very bold question. Was it planned? It could have been.
So our daughter is now 21. It was not planned.
Right.
But you know what? I've reflected on that because I was like, I'm 25. I know how to prevent a pregnancy.
Yeah.
So I think I was like, on some level, I was like, fill me with your sperm, baby.
Right.
You know,
your ovaries were churning.
I was ripe and ready. And I
say that like mine are working. They're long gone. But you know, just like there was something going on.
Yeah.
And how long were you with him for?
7.5 years. They're playing in Sydney tonight.
And you're still friends?
Still friends, yeah.
Love it.
Yep.
You're still friends with your ex?
Yeah, very much so.
This is a nice modelling. I've got mixed bag on that front, but we'll get into that.
Yeah.
So then when do you remarry?
So then I had a 2-year single mum phase.
Yeah.
Which my daughters and I reflect on that as being halcyon times. You know, we just the sun shines on that epoch because we had each other. We were a little trio of you know, badass
sisters
bitches.
Doing it for themselves.
Yeah, no, we were angry cunts.
Great.
Yeah. I had a little mini me, one who's a dead ringer for my mum now, but she a Nook and then Dee Dee, and we just got along and we loved each other, and it was just the three of us.
It's like fuck the patriarchy.
Yep.
We're just doing our thing.
Yep.
Were you rooting around at this point?
No, and that's one of my big regrets.
Right.
I should have fucked at least 15 strangers in that 2-year period. And I just thought I would be single for a lot longer, Nellie.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, and that's the feeling I think that it's worth reflecting on.
Yes.
When you're in your double bed or whatever, king size, and there's that acreage of empty space, you feel like that will never be filled.
Yeah.
You are just going to be perpetually lonely and longing, and that basically you are the inventor and creator of loneliness.
Can I ask who's in that phase? Because I'm happy to say that's the phase that I am in. And you do, even though I do this podcast and I know it's not true, you're like, this is life. You used to bring me flowers. It feels like, doesn't matter how rational, you're like, well, I'm done. Done.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah.
Gone. Even in my pretty frock. With this rack.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you're there. You regret it because I said to Yumi, are you single, ready to mingle? What's the status? I hope you don't mind me revealing this. She texts me and goes, anyone comes near my vulva, I'll vomit. So you're not in that phase now.
No, if I needed a word for it, like single, you know, looking, mingling, my word is repelling.
Yeah. Hang on.
Yeah.
Repelling.
No. Yeah. There's like a force field of
So
birds
even
fly into it, they die.
And it makes this noise.
It laser zaps them.
No. Vagina dentata. Culture studies student, early 90s. So you get married again for how long?
About 10 years.
About 10 years.
Two more kids.
So you got 4 kids.
Uh-huh.
4 kids, dogs.
No, I was just like, I thought you were about to ask, are you one of... No.
That's racist, Nelly.
Yes, Ben. That is both racist and homophobic. How many kids have you got?
I have 2 kids.
You got 2?
Yeah.
I can barely
zero
keep
human kids.
Pot plants alive.
4, 2. All right, there's a lot of humans, creating humans up here.
And then, and for this I would like a round of applause.
Please.
About 2 months ago...
Yeah.
My divorce came through.
Woo! Do you know what? And I know all three of you do this in your own particular way, but one of the things that we really try and do in this space, the narrative certainly that we would have grown up with, divorced woman in her 40s, that's why I deliberately try and counter that kind of perception that that's a tragedy. You're happy about it.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm stoked.
You made a good decision for yourself and the people in your life.
Absolutely.
We applaud that.
Yeah.
This is excellent. We have to change that narrative. So you're not interested in dating at all at the moment?
Not even a bit. Mind you, in the whatever, I've been single 2 years.
Yeah.
In the 2 years that I've been single, only one person has asked me out.
How'd they ask you?
Well, it's my barber.
Yeah.
He's about 15 years younger than me. Bit of a gut, not hot.
Yeah.
He's like...
You know he might listen to this.
I'm going to have a steak and a bottle of red wine. A, I don't eat red meat. And B, I'm an alcoholic. I don't drink.
Yeah.
On Saturday night, do you want to come over?
It's a big cue.
It's really not. I was like, I hate this. I hate you. I hate steak and I fucking hate red wine. Fuck yourself. Fuck yourself.
And I'm buying some clippers and I'm doing my own fucking hair from now on. Are you still getting your hair cut?
No, I changed it to a different person.
Yeah, bet you did. Bet you did. So, no, let's go back to it, and I think I would love you two to weigh in on this, because there's no way on earth, and you can, as much as you want, you're hot as fuck. There's no way on earth it's anything to do with your looks or your personality. The only reason I can think of that people aren't hitting on you is because they're intimidated. Would you agree? Like, are you two weigh in?
They have no choice. That you can't.
No, okay, I'll say something.
You're ugly.
Yeah. I'll say something. It's because you got to, like, do you give Leso vibes? I say that because I do. Right? I've literally been in this room after doing comedy about, like, having a male partner, and a woman said to me, "No, you're definitely lesbian." I was like, "I think you'll find I'm not." And so I don't know what your choices are.
All right, I mean, Yumi, at the Opera House the other night...
Can I say two things? One, you 100% I thought you were a leso when I met you. Was about to have a crack, didn't. Second, come on, she's gorgeous. Second, there's no lesbians hitting on you either.
No lesbians hitting on me either. All right,
anyway, go back.
Yep.
Go
that is confusing.
Yeah, but how much time are you spending at Bunnings?
No, Chris, I really did walk in and go, I don't know her, but definitely gay.
I reckon it's the only reason I got a spot on this podcast. And I'm fucking here for it, you know. Now, I have a bit about it. Like, you know, my mum says my new haircut is edgy. That's her word for lesbian. But, you know, and I'm not a lesbian, but I'm a huge fan of their work, okay? Why wouldn't you? Like, why wouldn't you be?
What do you think? Why are people not hitting on this superstar?
I think because you are known and people would immediately think she's out of my league.
Or she's taken.
Yeah.
I reckon most people
No, but it's also the repelling vibes.
Taken.
I mean,
It's the
repelling vibes. No. The way you spoke about that barber, like there wasn't even an ounce of empathy for him. Not one skerrick.
No, but mate.
Wait,
that's
and your
hot.
Point is?
What?
Your point is?
That's the force field. That's the verbal manifestation.
You're not in the zone. You don't want it. That's why it's not fucking happening.
No, but that makes
and that's
you
my
even
universe
more attractive.
Shit coming out. It's my universe shit. You put out what you fucking...
Nah,
that's
mate.
My thing.
Now, have we got... Now she's going to get the high priestess out. Do we have any straight men in the audience? What? Are you out? We've got another?
You might be the only one in
Sydney.
We've
got one on two, yeah. Because this is my thesis, and there's no basis to this, just observation. The fact that you are not interested makes you more attractive. No?
I don't know. I mean, let's be real. Look at my haircut.
Oh, no, totally.
It's a repelling haircut.
What I don't understand
haircut.
Is how all the lesos are not hitting on you. That's where we're getting to. But sure. Yeah.
Well, it's all by design.
Now, take me back. Take me back. To little Yumi, what did you think dating, sex, relationships would be? And what do you think from this age that they actually are? Like, are they the same thing? Is there a disconnect?
God, that's a big question. Yeah. And how do I connect the two? Little tiny Yumi was a lot like my 9-year-old. Did not give a fuck. Didn't give a fuck. Was just incredibly independent, sassy, really sus of adults.
Yeah.
Really sus of anybody trying to exert authority without having earned respect.
Yes.
And I think that I just did not want to engage with that. I didn't like my parents' marriage. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is rigged. She's his maid. She's as smart as, if not smarter than him. This whole thing is fucked. Fuck that shit.
So you could observe that from a really young age.
Yep, and I was anti-marriage from a really young age, and I was anti-having children.
And isn't that interesting? So this sounds like a joke, but it's not. I wonder, just connecting what you said before, if that's happening, plus you discover that you discover masturbation and you discover that sex, whatever that means, can be delivered auto, then you're not going, I need a husband, or I need a wife, or I need a da-da-da. Is it all part of the same picture?
Quite possibly, therapist.
Mm. Oh! Sorry, my doctor feeling you too early.
But now, as an adult, just sort of extrapolating, I sort of feel like I was right and I should have listened harder. Right. I think at some point the ovaries do speak pretty loud.
So does the culture.
Yeah, and so does the horniness.
Sure.
So there's a whole like, trio of bad influences making you make bad decisions. Yeah. You know, I had a bunch of people over last night and they were all childless except me. And I was like, you guys have made the right choice.
Oh, you live in La Vida Loca. Seriously, I reckon of all their things, and you've had a lot more of this than me, but of all the...
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Things I've ever said on TV that I got shit for was when I said, being a mother's not the most important thing I've ever done. Mm. And I got so... And I'm a really dedicated parent, but I got so much shit for it. But it's fucking true. I've made other contributions to the world.
Yes.
And I will not dismiss the contribution of women who don't have children. Mm-hmm. They're living La Vida Loca.
Preach. They are.
Aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
And I think when we forecast forward, a lot of the new generation will unapologetically have childless and happy lives, whereas I think a lot of our generation who did make that choice were punished for it.
100%. Mm. Absolutely. My youngest child, she said, when she's older, she wants 3 flatmates. One of them has to be fat. And she says that with positivity. She's like, one of them has to be fat so I can cuddle them like you, Mum. They need to be fat and asexual. The other one needs to be a gamer, and the third one needs to have a chronic illness so they can never leave. Interesting child. Very. And if you think she's joking, you're out of your fucking minds. Like, this is a plan. This is a whole plan. No children? She's like, I'm not having children. Absolutely not. All right, Ben, what about you? Young Ben.
So I'm still recovering from... Did anyone see that movie in Australia, Bad Boy Bubby? I'm
just
Bad Boy Bubby situation brewing in your daughter's psyche.
Yes.
Great cinema, really disturbing
Very
situation.
Very disturbing. I watched that after some edibles. It was a whole thing.
Hi, Nelly. So a bit of background about me. I'm 63. I've just divorced my third husband after 31 years of marriage. I live in a non-English speaking country overseas, have been outside Australia for 25 years. I come from Western Australia, lived some of my childhood in Kalgoorlie, so not far from Meriden. I'm very tall, very intelligent, very upfront. How the hell do you think I'm going to go forward with my life now? Any ideas?
I mean, I've got a million. I mean, your life is already amazing.
This is, okay, you tell me what you hear and then I will piggyback on you.
Oh, look, how are you going to go forward? I mean, your life is of infinite potential.
You are going forward.
Well, yeah, like your life is going forward. Your life is going forward, you know. That's one thing you cannot stop except definitively. And it's just like if you are a person of curiosity and enthusiasm, the world is limitless. Mm. There's so much to see and to do and people to meet and causes to commit to and justice to fight for and trees to sit under. Somebody, a really good friend of mine, was quoting a Rilke poem yesterday. Where is the Rilke poem? And it's this absolutely glorious meditation on art. I'm going to read it to you. You need to make some chat while I find it. Okay, so this is Irena Maria Rilke. It's Archaic Torso of Apollo. We cannot know his legendary head with eyes like ripening fruit, and yet his torso is still suffused with brilliance from inside, like a lamp in which his gaze, now turned to low, gleams in all its power. Otherwise, the curved breast could not dazzle you so, nor could a smile run through the placid hips and thighs to that dark centre where procreation flared. Ooh. Otherwise, this stone would seem defaced beneath the translucent cascade of the shoulders and would not glisten like a wild beast's fur, would not from all the borders of itself burst like a star, for here there is no place that does not see you. You must change your life.
Oh, stop. I have a combination of goosebumps and fanny flutters, Van Badham.
Well, this is the thing, like the poem's about how great art inspires growth and inner change. And the friend of mine who sent it to me is this brilliant American writer who suffers from agoraphobia. Mm. And it's had a terrible effect on her, like limiting her physical world.
Yeah.
And she was like, what do I do? How do I have these moments if I can't go to the Met? And I'm like, Allegri's Miser, Glenn Gould's performance of Bach's Goldberg Variations, like this infinite, we have never lived in a more culturally rich time where all the treasures of every great civilization are accessible to us. Mm. And for me, you know, that's when my father died, my mother was a widow for 10 years, you know, nursing this grief. And when Dad died, I was single and on my sort of dating train. And my mother, I remember bawling at the dining room table saying, just be aware that this is the price of marriage. This is the price of true love. This grief, insurmountable. Oh. And it was a hell of a warning. Mm. And it made me think, well, then it's got to be worth it, doesn't it? Like, you know. Yeah,
that's right. And yes, man. Can we sit with that for a second? That is, to me, that's the key. Right. It's, as you know, I've just been through a funeral with beautiful Cal Wilson, and one of her best friends from New Zealand read a beautiful poem. And the gist of it was basically, I will always carry your heart in my heart. And that, like, I can't explain the enormity of that. What connecting that to what you're saying, to me, this is why if you are going to invest in true love, we know the cost of that could come, right?
Yeah.
Either through death or divorce. And it is the risk that you either choose to take or don't. I would say, going back to the listener, there's a couple of possibilities. One is, this is your third divorce. I don't see that as a failure. Like, don't let anyone say to you, oh, you've been married for whatever. If you want to get married again, go for it. What I would say, though, just an invitation to consider whether you want to make that investment. Maybe you want to make a different investment. As Van's saying, is it in art? Is it in travel? Is it in your friendships? Do you want to, and I don't mean this in a trite way, I'm not saying you have to play lawn bowls, do you want to find a new skill? You're not done yet, babe. You're 63. You could have another 20, 30 years on the planet. There's plenty of novelists who didn't start writing until that age, or painting or singing or whatever it is. What is it that you actually want out of the rest of your life? Don't tell yourself that has to be another husband. It might not be. You might take lovers.
Well, my mum was 71 when Dad died.
Yeah.
And my mother's next 10 years were about music and art and all the things that she was interested in. Mm. And going through her house and sort of sorting, I found the most extraordinary collection of music programs, Brandenburg Orchestra and the Australian Opera, and just, you know, public talks that she'd go to and demos that she went to. And my mother had this unbelievable group of friends, the little gang, and they shared these experiences with her, and they had these amazing adventures. And even when my mother got sick and was physically incapable of leaving the house, my mother was obsessively listening to ABC Jazz and ABC Classical and watching the news and engaging and staying part of life, like, to the end.
And whatever, you know, it is for you, you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to share with you, I mean, this is quite vulnerable, but I think it's important to reciprocate that vulnerability with the caller. I have this vision. If I am single at 63, this is so embarrassing, but it's also beautiful. I have this vision that I will have an apartment in the CBD in Melbourne, because my love affair with Melbourne will not end, and that I will be a Gertrude Stein van. I will be hosting salons, having dinner parties, going to the theatre when I can, walking around the botanical gardens. If that's me on my own, that is a beautiful vision. If that's me with someone that I love and adore, that's also a beautiful vision. Neither have more weight for me.
Oh, well, this is the thing. I mean, my mother obsessively loved the Sydney Swans. Sometimes were disturbing. There was a shrine incident, which was a bit difficult to deal with. But this is the thing. Like, it was about where is the centre of your joy, and where do you love your own company the most? And like, I'm really grateful that I spent so much time traveling on my own. Like, I really learnt to love my own company and to, you know, I have a very strong inner compass.
Yeah.
And can find where I, what I need to see and where I need to go, and have that sense of confidence in a new city that I can orient myself. And
you can learn.
I'm not going to say there weren't lonely times on the road, but it's a learned skill. It really is. And it's the most liberating.
Yeah.
You know, I think of those months before I met Ben and how I had accumulated all of these experiences, made all of these decisions, and then finally knew what my life was, and I was content.
Yeah.
And there were happier days and there were sadder days, because life is like that.
Yeah.
But a fundamental sense of contentment.
There are in relationships too.
Yeah.
I think that's important as well.
Well, so, I wouldn't give him back, frankly, Nellie.
No, of course you wouldn't, bless. But for our caller, don't trick your brain into thinking the only way that my life can move forward is if I find the next husband. That is simply not true. There's plenty of people at your age and older on their own. Maybe they take lovers, maybe they don't, maybe they're out, maybe they're not. You get to decide what the rest of your life looks like. And if there's something that you've always wanted to do that you were scared to do, do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
When else are you going to do it? Do it now.
And, you know, I've got to say, one of the greatest senses of joy you'll ever have is in that minute after you've conquered a fear.
100%.
You know, and that's extraordinary. You know, I used to be scared of dogs. Do you know this?
Yes, yes.
And so I got myself locked in a dingo enclosure, which was really terrifying, but I wanted to face down that fear, and the dingoes didn't eat me, even though my brain was telling me they were definitely going to eat me.
Yep.
And I walked out, and it was like rebirth. It was like this amazing sense of ownership. You know, it was like buying a house. Like, I was less excited about buying a house than I was about triumphing over my fear of dogs. Yeah. And it's those kind of...
those things, and they're never done. There's always something. So I don't know if you know this, but I started doing, after wanting to do it for 30 years, I started doing drag last year.
I love it.
And I'm like, I can't do it. Like, I'm too old. I'm too fat. I don't move well enough. I'm not skilled. Like, I'm used to being in work situations that I know I'm good at, where I'm in control. This felt completely out of control, and it was the best thing I could have done, because I'm not perfect at it, but I fucking love it. And it just elevated me. It's an elevated version of me. So therefore it elevates me.
You know what's interesting? Like, I think we're having these conversations with a sense of like wonder and amazement.
Yeah.
Because frankly, the cultural document did not provide women with these stories,
absolutely,
or these opportunities. And I think we have to be very clear that we are living in the shadow of patriarchal traditions that didn't reward or celebrate the fearlessness of women or the independence of women. And it is interesting watching Mad Men and watching these relationships that the characters get into that are obviously based on the memories of the writers writing about their parents is quite clear, you know, and movies like Revolutionary Road and that, you know, that was my parents' generation and your parents' generation, and these sort of messages that we had about what life should look like according to who. And this is the thing, like the idea that happiness is going to be tied up in a partner. You can have a really happy relationship with a partner, and I am super pro marriage as long as it's a marriage that's really truly based on the meeting of minds, which you know has happened to me, which is great, but I would have been infinitely more unhappy badly partnered than I ever would have been on my own. I would have been happy on my own. And that's sort of...
Babe, we see it all the time. We see it all the time, even in our age group who supposedly post-feminist. We see it all the time. We see people in marriages that are miserable because it's not culturally acceptable to leave, even though we can still do it. We can do it now. You can get your bank account. You know, the structures are easier, not perfect, but easier. But there's still a cultural pressure, and there is on our caller to kind of go, 63, you're done. You're not done. Fuck that. As Van said, this is, think of it as a shadow of patriarchy and rip it up. Rip it up. Move into the light if you need that metaphor. You get to choose.
Yeah, be the cultural narrative you'd want the women who came after you to read.
Yes.
You know, like, and the world is just so exciting and random. And, you know, every single place on this planet, like the bleakest, darkest place, is beautiful if you look at it through that lens of curiosity and enthusiasm. And I think they're the most important, you know, next to kindness and empathy, the most important qualities to cultivate: curiosity and enthusiasm, and just being able to look at, you know, the way the light hits the edge of a roof in an industrial building, or, you know, like a pigeon dances on an urban street, or a flower blooms, or any of those things, you know, and the moments of great art, whether it's visual or dance or anything else, or sport, that speak to these, you know, moments of distilled perfection. That's the marrow, man. Like,
that's the marrow. And I think lean into the positives. So the positives of being single, the main positive I think is freedom. So let's say, I'll give you a concrete example. Let's say you really love cocktails or mocktails. When you're 63, you love cocktails or mocktails. If you had a partner, you'd have to negotiate this on your own. You can go, right, I'm going, if you've got the means, I'm going to go to 5, 6, 10, 20 places and try that cocktail or that mocktail. And that is my adventure. I'm going to do it once a year for the next 10 years. Whatever it is, you have the freedom to do that in a way that a lot of partnered people don't. The reason I say that is because I think all we hear is the negatives, like you're going to be lonely, you're going to be on your own, you haven't got someone there on your birthday or whatever. But what are the positives? You can also walk into a shop, decide when you leave, decide when you go, you know, like you, that freedom is also to be cherished. And that's not to shit on couples. That's to say there's positives and negatives in both situations.
You know, when I broke up with my English boyfriend when I came to Melbourne, I decided I was never going to own a brown couch ever again. Yeah. That was a hard and fast rule. I was like, I do not want a brown couch made of corduroy that stinks of incense sticks and cigarette smoke and ex-girlfriend. Like, that is just, and do you know what I did, Nelly? Something you could never do in a relationship: white furniture. I bought so much white furniture and patchwork quilts, and I filled the house full of flowers. And I just, you know, and it was, there are opportunities available to you when you're only accountable to yourself. And they're liberating.
For one day, being able to have white shag carpet.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine my little salon?
you know, Ben and I bought a couch. We have to buy a new couch. And obviously I picked the color. I think we all know it's green, by the way. It's actually deep. It's a deep rainforest teal. But it was the most extraordinary experience because it was really like, that's marriage, because he's 6'1" and I'm 5'2".
Yeah.
And if he can sit on a couch without his knees going to his ears, my feet won't reach the ground.
Yeah.
And it was this like interminable, it was like being on a reality television show. In fact, there's a pitch, it's called Couch, and it's just couples buying a couch.
Buying a couch.
And I said to the guy in the store, do people fight here? And he was like, everyone fights here. This is what happens. Yeah. And just the number of negotiations required around this couch and this process of negotiation. And I think that we have a couch that, you know, like, is not my ideal couch and maybe not his. I mean, it is deep rainforest teal. Yeah. But, you know, if you're on your own, you can buy and you're buying a couch, buy the couch.
She can go and buy the pair of lips couch if she wants to. In white. She can do whatever she wants. And please call back and let us know if you've made any plans like that, because I'd love to hear like concrete examples of things where you kind of go, all right, this is my pivot.
Hi, Nelly. I wanted to give you an update on the letter you read out in the episode with Scott Brennan, which was also repeated in producer Sammy's Best of 2023. To recap my situation, I am divorced in my mid-40s with two children. Last year, I was living with a man who I loved and still do, but I didn't want to live with him anymore. He moved into my house and his daughter stayed a few nights a week. After 2 years of this arrangement, I realized that living together wasn't working and I was becoming resentful and anxious, so much so that my doctor put me on antidepressants. I am in perimenopause stage, so that may have been a factor, but needless to say, the antidepressants did not work. And the only thing left to do was to have a heart-to-heart about our living situation. I explained to him that I felt like I had lost who I was as a person and missed having my independence and space. Resentment was also building around finances, chores, and blending our two families. He was hurt by my decision, but eventually accepted it and moved out 4 months later. Scott said wanting my own space does not mean breaking up. I had no intention of breaking up with him, and asked him if he'd be willing to be in a relationship but live apart. If you Google it, it is called LAT, or living apart together. So many of our family and friends thought our situation was weird. However, Nelly said that my needs mean something.
Right, and I will tell you, well, I'm going to give you some context, Danny, just in case you and other listeners haven't heard the initial call. So the short story is that this woman had been married for a long time, got divorced, started dating within a year of breaking up the divorce, and relatively quickly this guy had moved in. The information we had at that time, it seemed as though he wasn't able to contribute anywhere near equally financially, and there was some concern about whether or not it was a sort of convenient housing situation. But either way, she was, as she's mentioned in her follow-up call, she was getting resentful. She wanted the space back. So she'd been in what I think was quite a claustrophobic marriage, had really enjoyed the independence and felt like she'd lost it. And I think both Scott and I were basically saying, that's okay, you know, like, have a chat to him. You don't have to live together. You don't have to parent someone else's kids. I will say, in very happy news, and then I'll ask your view, she's done a second follow-up call where she said it's going super well. So even though initially he had that reaction that I think a lot of people would have of like, why do you want me to move out, and experience it as a rejection, they've actually made it work. They're still together. They live close by but not in the same house. And the short story is happy days.
Hmm.
Right? Well, so what do you think? Yeah.
Yeah, look. Excellent that it's worked out. I've always been quite interested in thinking about the historical kind of social pressure for people to live together.
Yes.
And even that being refined further down as nuclear family.
Yes.
It's not that long ago that extended family lived together.
Yeah.
And we lived in communities, and, you know, it takes a village to raise a child and all that kind of stuff. And it's only relatively recently that we've put ourselves in situations where we sit in a box with our partner and maybe two, three kids, and that's it. Mm. And anything other than that is weird and should be shunned.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even that notion you talk about, there was discrepancies in income and sharing a load of chores and that kind of stuff. Mm. It's not that long ago where chores were a collective responsibility of not just that nuclear family or not just that couple. Mm. And when it's been whittled down to just that one couple, it can become inequitable pretty quickly, which obviously puts pressure on. I mean, I know a few couples of my generation who have been in those relationships for a very long time and have never lived together, and that's normal.
Yeah.
But again, as we mentioned before, most of them can do that because they can afford to.
Yes.
And lots of people can't afford to do that. Mm. The other thing around that I often think about is, and women, single mums in particular, have mentioned this to me over the journey, is the pressure to have to go and partner up.
Yeah.
And I've heard women talk to me about husband shopping.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's not normal.
Yeah.
And the mythology, particularly around single mums bringing up boys, because if they do that, then the boys are just going to turn into little criminals.
Yeah.
And you need, you know,
mums are too soft. Yeah.
You need the positive male role model to teach boys how to be proper good men, which is demonstrably nonsense. The researchers tell us very clear that single mums partnered with other women are just as, if not better, at raising kids and boys as others statistically. But there's that massive social pressure where women in particular aren't allowed to be on their own.
Yeah.
It feels like that men have much more permission to do that themselves.
Bachelor pad Danny.
But also even socially, you know, not long after Sandy and I got together and we started living together and a bunch of our mates started partnering off, I noticed that, you know, people were all working full time or whatever. Come Saturday morning, a bunch of my male mates would get up at 7, pack the car and go and play golf. Or, you know, they'd go to the footy or they'd do stuff on their own or with other blokes, which was quite normal. That's what blokes did. But for women to do that, or for women to say, I want to have some time by myself, was just a bit odd.
Yeah, what's wrong with her?
So, you know, to just be mindful of where that social pressure is coming from. And, I mean, the other thing that that piqued my interest about that, that call, the difference between her wanting to or not wanting to live with him versus her not wanting to live with another adult at all. And, you know, again, why do we have to live with other adults if we don't really want to? If we find an adult we want to live with, then great. If we're hanging out with an adult we like spending time with, but we don't want them in the house, and that's also cool. And we as men need to be mindful that that's, you know, that doesn't make you weird or unfair or withholding affection or all that kind of stuff.
And I think in your language, it's all made up, right? So these ideas of household configurations, as you said, historically, like we're all banging on now about 25-year-olds still living at home. These cultures existing now, and certainly historically, where that would have been weird if they didn't.
Yeah.
It's completely normal for extended family to live together, for the grandparents to be there, to, you know, all live in the same house, let alone next door in the same suburb or whatever. And there's no reason that you can't apply that lens to this situation. If she is able to afford to live on her own, and that is preferable for her mental health and makes her a better parent, better partner, all the thing, who the fuck cares what the neighbours think?
Yeah.
You know, like, good on you.
Yeah, I mean, when you say it out loud, it's really weird,
isn't it?
But that's the social world that we live in.
Can't you imagine though? You can totally imagine. She sounds like she's similar age to you and I. You can imagine her at a barbecue, kind of going, "Yes, this is my partner of 3 years. We don't live together," and everyone going, "Why? What's wrong with him? What's wrong with you?" Like, what did he do something? Did you do something? Like, there is still, even among progressives, I reckon, there is still stigma around that stuff. As she said, and you can Google it, there is a big movement of LAT, living apart together. I interviewed a couple actually who've been together 35 years, who live in Tasmania, and they both have their own house. That's just one example. There's many others. But I reckon, you know, rip up the script. If this works for both of you, I'm glad that he was able to get past the idea that it was a rejection, because I didn't hear it as a rejection at all.
No.
I heard it as a woman who hadn't had autonomy for a long time and then got some, then gave it away and wanted it back. And that's not on him.
No, and also thinking that it's not that long ago that young women went from their parents' house to their husband's house.
Yeah.
And there was no independent living. You know, share housing, you know, certainly for my parents' generation was not a thing, where it's extremely normal, if not desirable.
Yeah.
Now. And great.
Yeah. And actually going back to single mums, one of the things I hear from occasionally, which I absolutely love the idea of for single parents, but also for older people, is that idea of reframing the concept of shared house from, oh, because I can't afford it, to, well, it takes a village. You know, if you've got two single mums with, you know, three, four, five kids between them, I can tell you logistically, in terms of costs of childcare and, you know, cooking and all the shit, that would be a lot easier and financially more viable. And the same, you know, in retirement. I can imagine living with four or five friends.
Well, that's something that we've been working on for a long time and got nowhere near close to making it happen. But
yeah,
it makes perfect sense. It just, you know, lives go in different directions and it's not always compatible or as compatible as it was 15 years ago, it seems.
Or it's still considered weird, I think. Like, it takes someone to really kind of go, no, let's make this happen.
Yeah.
You know, and you occasionally do see that. I've got a friend whose grandma and five of her friends, and this takes money. I get it. I get it. The housing crisis. Anyway, they all bought, instead of going into retirement village, they all bought apartments in the same block.
Yep.
And they pay collectively between the six of them for a nurse and a cleaner to come once a week to check everyone's blood pressure and medications, and then a cleaner to clean everyone's house. Danny, they meet at 4 o'clock every day, drink gin and bloody play canasta. Right? This is the dream.
Yeah. Look, I don't think I'm talking out of school, but Sandy's parents were building a house when her grandfather died suddenly, and so they changed the plans of the house to put a little flat on the back of it so Sandy's grandmother could move in.
Yeah.
And it was built and it was fine, and then a flat turned up on the other side of town where two of her mates lived, and she said, I'm going there, you kidding?
Yes.
And had a great time.
Love that. Really interested to know a very simple but pointed thing.
Okay.
Do you still believe in love?
Oh, my God, yes.
Oh, tell me.
Oh, I so believe in love. But you know what I believe in now? I just believe in all the loves.
Yeah.
I believe in all the loves.
Tell me.
I read a book recently, Christos Tsiolkos' latest novel, The In-Between.
Oh, it's so good.
And it is such a good book. I think it is his best book. And I adored that book. And the thing is, that book is about love.
Yeah.
You know, there's all the hot and heavy sex in it. Yeah. It's raw and it's gritty and all the things. But actually, that book is about love.
And connection. I agree.
All the ways in which love can be felt and expressed, and all many shapes and forms that it can be found in.
Yeah.
And that just gives me absolute ultimate hope and optimism and that, you know, you can get loving in a lot of places. And
you really
find,
can.
And you can find love with people that you would not necessarily have thought that you could, and you can give love to people that you wouldn't necessarily have thought that you could. And, you know, Nelly, it's a bit like, you know, when you have your second child, okay, pregnant with your second child, and you think, you have anxiety because you think, how am I ever going to be able to love this child as much as I love the first one?
Yep.
And then that baby is born and you realize that it doesn't take any love away from the first one.
Just expands.
You just grew a whole new love limb.
Correct. Correct. The heart expands. The abundance mentality. I mean, even going back to something you said earlier about friendships, like I really noticed friends have always been very important to me, and I know they have been to you as well. But I did notice once I became separated, that part of my life became bigger. It was already big, but it expanded because that love that I had in my chest needed somewhere to go, and it came back to me and it grew and it's still growing. And even if it wasn't romantic love, like the absolutely. Love that's there is absolutely. I don't know, it's an infinite resource.
It's an infinite resource. And yeah, to draw a couple of the points that we've been discussing together, and the way that when you do end a very long-term marriage, and people really want to find a cause. They want, you know, they want to be able to identify the cause, maybe so that, as you said, they can avoid it. They can drive around that pitfall. But something that came back to me from a number of channels was that people wondered whether I was having an affair with my trans friend.
Why?
Because, and I discovered this later, is that one thing that my trans friend said that they think that we have is something that's called a queer platonic, that we are queer platonic partners.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So
yeah,
apparently
yeah.
If you Google queer platonic
partners, oh, yeah, it's a thing.
There'll be a whole literature on it. And it's
100%.
I didn't know that it was a thing.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There is, I know what they mean is that there's a certain intimacy
yes.
between us that is not sexual in... Yeah. In any way.
Yeah.
And I think of it as a very close friendship.
Yeah.
But people did read it somehow as it being romantic, because maybe that's the only way that they could figure such a love.
I think it's most common with gay men and straight women, what we would have in, you know, the olden days called fag hags, which some gay men still use that term, some don't like it. And that is often misread as romantic. And I think it's often misread as the woman has fallen in love with him, rather than kind of going, no, they are both in love with each other. It's just not sexual. Like they may even be, you know, each other's person, soulmates, whatever you want to call it, twin flames, all the things. There doesn't have to be sex for it to be real love.
Exactly. And I think the thing that mostly I'm done with, Nelly, in the end is labels.
Yeah, me too.
That I realized at the end of at my marriage is that I fundamentally wanted to de-wife.
Yeah.
In a way, I don't care whether we have a divorce. That's a legal nicety. That has nothing to do with a property settlement. That has you know, that's annulling a contract, essentially.
Yeah.
But I did realize that I wanted to de-wife. Because
you wanted to be clear,
because the expectations that are put on you with the label, both internally and externally, are ultimately very limiting. And I feel this, like I feel like if I were to enter another relationship, I don't even really wouldn't even really want to call us a couple, because I think being a couple comes with a whole freighted set of baggage about what that means.
Isn't language slow, Claire? I mean, you're a historian, but, you know, I just find language so slow. I had to introduce, I'm seeing Linda. I had to introduce Linda the other day, and I'm like, I don't want to say girlfriend. I don't want to say, like, I'm not 12. I don't want to say partner. That feels like we're, you know, running a law firm. And I was like, oh, this is my sweet pea. Like, that's the only label I could like think of that felt kind of right. We need, I don't know, language has got to evolve in this area, I think.
Yeah, or, you know, we start making it up for ourselves.
Yeah, I reckon we've got to. I'm going with sweet pea for now.
I think,
you know,
that's,
what, you are a sweet pea. Oh, you are such a sweet pea. Thank you so much for coming on. Will you come back on? Because I've got a trillion questions.
Yeah, I will.
I would really love it.
I've enjoyed this conversation immensely, Nelly.
Oh, me too. And can you tell me, and I'll put links into the show notes, do you have anything to plug? I mean, you've got a trillion books. Do you want to plug any of them?
Well, I guess the book that would have most relevance to the conversation that we've had today is You Daughters of Freedom, which is about the Australian suffrage movement and most particularly what Australian women did next after Australia became the first country in the world where women won full political equality, white women, right to vote and to stand for parliament, and then what the way in which Australian women then became ambassadors for that gold standard of democracy around the world. And that is the book that most embraces that first wave of feminist ideas of what liberation for women might mean and how to go about it. And I guess was the one that I had most in mind when I was thinking about what my responsibilities as a modern woman might be to that generation of change makers.
Well, lest us not forget for one second that those women, even in the most extreme of abusive and toxic relationships, could not leave. And I think that's an interesting place to start to reflect on whether or not you should step into your autonomy and make those decisions. Thank you so much, Professor Claire Wright. We will see you back for Sloppy Seconds.
Okay.
Thanks, Claire.
Dear Nellie, I could use some advice, dear Nellie. Yes, yeah, some help would be nice, dear Nellie. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nelly. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly. When you're 40 or more, dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.